This is a recording of the February 25th, 2026 regular Board of Directors meeting to convene at 4 p.m. at the Chugach Electric Association Boardroom.
Hello, everyone. We are starting the Chugach Electric regular board meeting for this month. It is 4:04. Directors present in the room. We have Director Rachel Morse, Dan Rogers, myself, Cece Cooper, and then online we have Suzanne Fleet-Green, which brings us to quorum. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Oh, I guess I kind of did that just to announce quorum. But same three directors in the room. And still online, we have Suzanne Fleet-Green, who joins Director Morris, Rogers, and myself. And then can we get quorum for the room, please?
We have Arthur Miller, Sherry Hires, Andrew Laughlin, Kyle Rudick, Nick Shmoniak, Julie Haskett, Josh Travis, Jake Johnson, Paul Millwood, Katie Millen, Sean Scaling, Trish Baker, Dusty Menifee, Catherine Queen, Dan Herman, Mark Hempstetter, Selena Bailey, Nikki Giordano, Tim Pryor, Eric Fox, Michael Verdos, Bernie Smith, thank you, Angela Keys, thank you, Kurt Egelhofer, Sarah Ansbrough, Marnie Isaacs, Dylan Farr.
Declan,
thank you. And Bill Pop, Alex Pintkennis. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Online we have Stephanie Hadell, Heather Slocum, Sandra Casey, Amanda Mankel, George Donner, Mitch Roth, and Nathan Golab.
Thank you. Right, that brings us to item 1C, safety minute. And that is Catherine Queen.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
My name is Catherine Queen, safety manager for Chugach Electric. And I'm going to talk about dangers of fatigue in the workplace. So, next slide, please. So basically, 7 to 9 hours of sleep is recommended for most adults. However, about one-third of adults average about 6 hours or less. Another really interesting point is 18 hours with no sleep is comparable to a 0.05% blood alcohol concentration. So just as an example, legal limit is 0.08, and for CDL drivers, it's 0.04. So 18 hours of sleep would get a CDL driver in trouble. Injuries occur 3 times more often in workers that have less than 5 hours of sleep, and sleep deprivation contributes to about 13% of work-related injuries. Why do we care about that? Especially up here in Alaska where we have all the dark, cold winters, is fatigue actually contributes to a great number of worker incidents and also vehicle incidents. So what can workers do? Try to get at least 7 hours of sleep a night without disruptions. Keep a consistent sleep routine because you do have a circadian cycle that gets disrupted when you're constantly changing your sleep routine. Avoid caffeine prior to bedtime. And if working nights, ensure sleep is occurring within 8 hours of going to work. There's also a lot of health concerns that can actually cause you to not get enough sleeps, like sleep apnea, joint pain, stuff like that. So make sure that you're addressing those health concerns. Eat regularly and exercise regularly and eat a balanced diet. Understand the side effects of your medications. Some medications will actually prevent you from getting good sleep. Make sure the sleeping environment is comfortable, cool, dark, and quiet. People often have a TV in their bedroom, for example, which is generally considered to be a bad idea. If napping before work, ensure duration is less than 45 minutes or greater than 2 hours to allow for a complete sleep and wake cycle. Next slide, I think 2 slides actually. You're right. Thank you. So, what can workers do? What can employers do? Supervisors should be alert for staffing issues that increase worker fatigue, such as understaffing, too much workload, strange work hours or inconsistent work schedules. Arrange schedules to allow for rest break and nighttime sleep. Adjust work environments to increase alertness, such as light and temperature.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think there's a problem with the audio. Mitch is trying to sync signal to us.
We have audio to everyone else.
Can Stephanie, can you hear us?
I can hear you, but I sent him an email to check his settings.
Okay.
But he can't hear us. Tell him it's not us.
I sent him an email.
Okay.
I guess we'll. Just real quick check. I know Stephanie's on the network. Not that that should matter, but
I wonder if we can tell him it's not us. It's not us.
I can hear you.
Just FYI,
on my phone.
Yeah. Can somebody who's online drop that in the chat? Because I know the online people can see the chat.
I don't know if they have access to the chat, right?
I just texted him. So.
Chat?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Go figure it out.
Okay. All right. Just making sure that others could hear. Perfect. Sorry about that.
No worries. Arrange for schedules to allow for rest breaks and nighttime sleep. Also, educate workers on the hazards and symptoms of worker fatigue. You know, what shows that you're fatigued. And implement a risk management plan for fatigue. Some safety statistics for January. We're actually doing really well, as opposed to last year. They had an extreme weather event, which contributed to quite a number of injuries. This year, we're doing really well. We have no recordable injuries at this point, no darts. And so we're zeros across the board, so that's really good, and we're going to try to keep it that way. We're really doing a lot of focus on slips, trips, and falls, which kind of was our downfall last year. The safety statistics by month, which is kind of interesting. So the recordable injuries by month are really high in January. That was our six OSHA recordables for that month. Probably most of them due to that that extreme weather event were line workers who had to go out and respond to outages. Oddly enough, the other I checked, but there's actually no extreme weather associated with those events, so it's not significant to extreme weather. So I thought that was an interesting comparison. As we go forward in the year, we'll also have some figures for 2026. But as we're zeros, there's nothing for 2026 yet. How are we getting hurt? Again, the number one cause of injury is slips and falls, usually from the same level, slips on the ice mostly. Second one is we're getting struck by an object or a tool because we put a hand in the line of fire or we're in an awkward position. And then the third most common cause of incidents is vehicle incidents. We've had quite a number of third-party caused vehicle incidents. So considering the amount of miles our folks drive, that's not surprising. So any questions?
Are there any questions from the board regarding the safety statistics? Right, no questions except love the January numbers. Let's keep that up. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Next, we have item 1D, electric power factoid, which is a day in the life of a lineman.
We have Jake Johnston with us this evening. Jake is from Idaho and has joined us, former lineman, he's now a manager of our maintenance and construction. So really happy to have him on board. Really has done an outstanding job, really bringing new ideas to Chugach in our operating division. So with that, go ahead, Jay.
Thank you, Arthur. Hello. It's my first time doing this to a board, so I hope you guys enjoy this. As Arthur said, my name is Jake. I'm an almost 16-year German lineman, done line work all over the United States, and I'm going to show you guys just a brief snippet of what our linemen do here at Chugach. So every day we start out with safety. This is perfect. We just followed the safety brief for January. So our crews always do a tailboard in the mornings before they go out to a job. They talk about the what, where, when, why, and how of what they're going to do. We do a lot of driving, especially in this huge state in our coverage area that we have. So that's one of the most dangerous parts of our job. It's not so much the electricity as it is getting to the job site and the conditions that we face trying to get there and when we get there. So it's paramount that the crews do this every day. It takes about 15 minutes, and they just go over everything that they can try to perceive that they're going to encounter before they actually get to the job site, and then they hone that tailboard in once they do get to the job site and see how those conditions are. Here at Chugach, we do hot sticking. We're allowed to rubber glove on 4 kV, 4,000 volts and below. Most of our system has gone away from the 4,000 volt system due at 1245 or 2569. We have a bunch of different voltages. But our guys, you'll see them if you ever see our crews out working, they'll be using those orange sticks that are in those photos there. Those are fiberglass hot sticks. It insulates them from the energized conductor as they make repairs or additions to the lines that we maintain. It's quite a skill to be able to do that. Our linemen here are very proficient at it. It's like an extension of their hand. They can put on grips. They can tie wire with them. They don't just close a fuse in. Some of the stuff they can do is an art that takes years of practice to learn how to do this, since we're a non-rubber gloving state. So everything we do energized has to be done with these sticks.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
So how long are those telescoping?
So there's multiple types of sticks. I could spend an hour on this subject, to be honest with you, just on sticks. But for example, those ones in the photos there are what we call a shotgun stick. They have a mechanism on them that open and close, yeah, that has a hook on the end. Most of those are pre-made to certain lengths. They do make extendable sticks. Those are usually yellow. They go up to 40 feet, 45 feet. They can operate those from the ground at a distance away in case that fuse blows up when they go to close it. That way they're outside of that danger zone of that fuse blowing, right? Does that answer your question?
Okay. Just seems like,
yeah, it's hard on your shoulders.
Those are energized lines are working with that.
Correct. So the picture on the right would be energized conductor that they're working on. The picture on the left, based on where the hand line is in that photo, right by his feet, the two people feet, that tells me that's de-energized, because you would never hang a hand line on an energized conductor like that, right? So that he'd be missing an arm if he did that, essentially. So de-energized on the left, but we still use those sticks to put on our grounds, because that line is not proven dead until there is a ground installed on it, right? Everything's just like as the stick imposes a shotgun, every gun is considered loaded until it's verified. Same thing with a line. It's considered live until you verify that line is dead, right? And that's by introducing a ground to that line. Bare hand and specially trained linemen, this is something that I'm pretty passionate about, and something I'm trying to push up here in Alaska. This is something Alaska hasn't really been introduced to yet. So we can do work once it gets introduced and language gets approved of working under helicopters and working bare hand on our transmission lines where it doesn't require an outage. We would be able to keep them transmission lines on the entire time while the crews made the repairs to the lines. It's very prevalent in the lower 48 with the way that their grids are down there. They're not able to take those lines out of service due to brownout possibilities and not being able to get those lines back, right? They're so overloaded with this data center boom that they just can't handle taking those lines out of service for repairs. So long story short, Faraday cage insulates you from the wire. It's the same thing. You wear a suit, it insulates you. It brings you at the same potential. It doesn't insulate you, excuse me. Brings you at the same potential as the wire. Now you're allowed to work on that voltage all the way up to 765,000 volts. You can be energized, work on that conductor with no residual effects and do your work. And we don't have to have outages on that transmission line. The helicopter portion of it is the same. There's two ways we could go about doing that. One is energized work with the bird. The other one is just utilizing the bird to be able to get to our remote locations. We can fly our guys in instead of expecting them to hike through the terrain or ride the snowmobiles or the six-wheelers. It's faster, right? You get under a bird, you long line to that structure, now you're there. Or they can drop you off on the top of certain structures, our lattice structures out by Point Mac and things like that, where we could just get to the work faster.
More questions?
Oh, I love
it. Okay,
So did you say we are not using this right now in Alaska, or we're just not using it unless the unless the transmission is out? So like we couldn't.
So the bare hand work has to be done while the line is energized. If not, we would be taking an outage, right, and grounding it, working it normal.
Okay.
So two-part question. Answer to the first is, as far as my knowledge is right now, the state of Alaska, there's not a bare hand certified program up here. When it comes to helicopter work, our contractors do in the state, but Chugach currently at this time does not. So that's something we're having internal talks about right now, is seeing what it would take to be able to get our guys certified to do this so we could be more efficient on the operations side, mm-hmm. getting to things faster, having less time spent and exposure spent on the right-of-way versus where the work is, mm-hmm. right?
Go ahead. Well, tell me, you're essentially insulating the lineman, but how does that work?
So everybody's seen a bird on a wire, right? You've seen a robin fly land on a power line. You always wonder, how doesn't that robin explode or get electrocuted by sitting on that power line? That is exactly what those linemen are doing. They're isolating themselves from any potential but that wire. So they become energized the same potential that wire is. So if it's a 345 line, that lineman is now energized at 345,000 volts, right? It flows over their body through the Faraday suit. They just become the same potential as that conductor. Then you can do the work because you're essentially the same. You are that conductor. You can work on it all. And then you bond yourself off. And it's a specialty training. You get a certificate to do it. There are schools in the lower 48 that teach this. It's not, you can't just be willy-nilly lineman and go out and be a bare hand. That's against the OSHA rules. Yeah. Yep. Apprentices, I know this is a big deal to our CEO, and I appreciate it a lot, too, as a lineman in the trade and now in management. What is an apprentice lineman? So every journeyman starts out as an apprentice. That's where you learn to become a journeyman lineman and actually be able to do the work that we do. They always train under a journeyman lineman. Apprentices bring fresh sets of ideas, strong work ethics, and the ability to ask questions. They break the norm of every day with fresh ideas and questioning attitudes, along with continuing education. They're brand new to the trade. They usually get traded around in their apprenticeship to different cooperatives, power companies, contractors. So they get to see all this different stuff that's going on all over the state. And it helps bring in new ideas and stay up to date on continuing education that's happening in the trade. They always come to work every day to learn. They're required to attend school yearly, pass field evaluations by their peers. They have classroom exams and training. In order to become a journeyman lineman, you have to have 8,000 hours of on-the-job training as an apprentice lineman. So it's equatable to about a four-year degree, right? It takes 4 years. Seen some at 3.5, seen some to 5, but most people it takes about 4 years to be able to become a journeyman lineman. And then at the end of your apprenticeship, you do have a final exam and a field exam to prove that you are. If you ever meet a journeyman or an apprentice lineman, usually apprentice linemen are young single males, so they are the life of the crew because everybody lives vicariously through these young guys that have fun all the time. So if you ever want a great story, talk to an apprentice lineman. They probably have a great story to tell you. What? Yes.
What does it take for Chugach to host apprenticeships? Do we have enough apprenticeship opportunities here? Are we looking to increase them? What does that look like?
Okay. Again, so we technically do not host the apprenticeship. The apprenticeship is done through the JATC. They're the ones who come up with the curriculum and the program for the apprenticeship through the union. Mm-hmm. So we essentially, if we want to call it host the person, but not the apprenticeship.
Right. That's
right?
What I mean, yeah.
Okay. So we have to be union certified, right, which we are. All our linemen are union. I guess I'm kind of confused by your question. They just have to come to work, essentially. That's what they have to do.
I guess what I'm asking is,
do we make enough space in our headcount to have an adequate number of apprentices to help support workforce development?
Yes, I would say absolutely. All our heavy crews have apprentice linemen on them, and they do a six-month contract with us, right? That's their call length. And then we always backfill with another apprentice. And me personally and professionally, I think that is amazing that we do that, that we actually cut out that space for an apprentice lineman and teach them, right?
So we have four right now, right?
We have four, correct. Yes, sir.
Every day we have four. And when they time out, we get four more.
Yep.
Great. Thanks.
This is just a short list of the equipment we use here at Chugach for our line crews. Every piece of equipment on this list gets utilized pretty much weekly right now. It takes a lot of equipment for us to do our jobs, not only proficiently, but safely, right? just because you can do it faster with something else doesn't mean it's the safest way to do it. And to us, in operations and Chugach as a whole, safety is key. It's paramount. Safety, quality, production, right? In that order. That's how we do things. So with all the equipment that you do see and the public sees and everything, this equipment is paramount for our operation. We have to have this in order to do this. And then if we continue to move to these more specially trained roles, it requires more equipment as well, right? We need to acquire that to be able to perform those roles safely. So just wanted to give a snapshot of the equipment that we do use. Facing our weather conditions, so I moved here in November, and I've been through earthquakes, wind storms, ice storms, snow storms, sunny days. Just haven't had a tornado or a volcano erupt yet. So our linemen, they face everything out there, right? We have every condition there is. Right now it's in the negatives. We have loop wagons rolling right now. If anything happens and we need a heavy crew, those guys are going to come in. They're going to be working out in those negative 20 degree temperatures right now to get that power turned back on. Do we always hear the greatest attitude about going into the weather? No, but those guys do it. Right at the end of the day, they put their boots on, they go out there, they work these long, dark hours in all these weather conditions that we face, and they turn the power back on. So I just want to say kudos to those guys to be able to do that, especially in the environments that we encounter here. Our linemen are always responding when Alaska needs them most, specifically Chugach, but we are on 24/7 call-outs. We have weather events. We have a lot of vehicle versus asset events. Whether or not that vehicle stays behind is another story. Mutual aid, when our guys went out and helped MEA after that event they had out there. Reconnections, low wires, emergency response. We always help out APD, AFD on any time our equipment's involved. So these guys are constantly at work, and then when they're not at work, usually their phone's ringing again so they can come back out and help turn that consumer back on or mitigate that safety issue for the public. So
I saw the fire that was just at International and like the Old Seward Highway. And I think your crew was called out because they had to start in someone's shed and then they were worried it was going to get to the utility lines. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Exactly what you were just talking about.
Yep. And if it is close and the fire department sees that, they will call us and ask us to de-energize those lines so they can run their hoses, right? Because conductive electricity versus water or some of their foam does not work very well. So, and that's my presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is good. Very informative. All right, next we have an action to approve the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll move to approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
There's a motion and a second by Director Norland and Director Fleet Green. Is there any discussion on the agenda? Yes?
I don't know if this is the appropriate place, but I want to disclose a conflict of interest in the executive session, and that I will not participate in the ICLUTNA section of that executive session.
Noted. Okay. So thank you for that. All in favor of approving the agenda, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Right. Agenda is approved. Persons to be heard. I know we have several members in the room. I was informed that Brittany Smith would like to comment. Hi, Brittany.
First off, good afternoon, all. For the record, my name is Bertie Smith, and before I even get into my comments, I want to say what a great presentation of what linemen do. That was really, really good, and looks like you've got yourself a really good person there, and it's going to be an asset to your team, no doubt about it. So, with that said, first I'd like to address the new House bill, HB 369, which is introduced by the House Special Committee on Energy, which relates to a slew of energy issues such as solar generation, diversification energy resources, diversified portfolio standard, which is 40% of delivered certified energy by 12/31/2036. But it still doesn't have any penalties like the original portfolio standard did, which is good. They have battery energy storage, and they have other energy stuff. Definitely a bill to follow. The first hearing is Thursday, tomorrow, at 1:30, House Energy. If you're interested, you should probably dial in. I will be. The Bylaws Committee passed option A, which is was the increase to the membership fee to $25 for $5 from $5. That was voted by 5-1. The committee also looked at option B, which is increased by adjusted every 5 years to the Anchorage Consumer Price Index, but the option A was more simpler. It also passed the non-sustainable edits to the bylaws, which the Chugach staff did an amazing job of editing and updating the bylaws. So appreciate to your staff again. It took a lot of work, I know. And then the nominating committee, which I attended, did a really good job with interviewing the four candidates, which were very qualified, and I understand they were all accepted by the nominating committee. And finally, I'd like to know when the Eklutna issues will finally become public. We've been doing this Eklutna thing for years, and it seemed like we ought to be able to do some of this in the public and not have executive sessions consistently all the time. So with that, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bernie. All right. So it's my understanding that the other members attending tonight did not wish to address the board. But if I'm mistaken, let me know, and we definitely have time for that. Okay. Then I do know we have Mitch Roth online. Mitch, I think you're on mute.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mike, I just have a couple brief comments, and Bernie actually touched on both of them. So, and I guess maybe I should say this is Mitch Roth, and I'm speaking as a member. The first one about this membership fee change, I'm not particularly opposed to updating that. And I see that the way the membership fee is currently implemented is that it appears in the bylaws as a $5 fee. And so there's some process of amending the bylaws in order to change that number from five to whatever the new number should be. And I actually think that's sort of a problem that I think this would be a lot better going forward if the amendment specified that the board of directors has the ability to set the membership fees rather than baking a particular number or an inflation escalator or any of the other financial things into the bylaws. And I also, I'm not quite sure, I couldn't find what the actual bylaws amendment, proposed amendment is. So at one point people were talking or discussing whether it required modifying the articles of incorporation, which is a 2/3 vote. But the comment would be the same, that